short statements of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find that in this sermon 203, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Do not tear away your curtain before Allah, in front of Allah, who is aware of your secrets. Take away from this world your hearts before your bodies go out of it, because herein you have been put on trial and you have been created for the other world." So, dear friends, there should be this curtain of humility, of submissiveness, of humbleness, this curtain of honor and reverence that we must have before and in front of and in the presence of God, in the presence of Allah. And where does this curtain of humbleness and submissiveness and humility and tawazu, as we say, this humbleness, this piety, this submissiveness in the presence of Allah? Well, we realize that He is aware of all of our secrets. So do not tear this curtain of reverence and honor and submissiveness and humility and humbleness in front and in the presence of Allah. And then Imam Ali continues and he says, "Take away from this world your hearts." Again, when we're talking about taqwa, we're talking about piety, God consciousness, God awareness. One of the integral and critical things that must be done is to detach our hearts from this world. Meaning, we shouldn't fall in love with this world. We shouldn't be attached to this world. This world, materialistic wealth and property and belongings and family members should not be the main priority and the main goal and the main love in our hearts and souls. For the main goal and the main priority and the love, the primary love, the pure and ultimate love, which should be in our hearts and our souls, is the love for Allah. And when is the time frame in order for us to be able to implement these things and inculcate these things in ourselves? Well, Imam Ali says, before your bodies go out of this world, meaning before we die. At the time of death, the doors are closed. The trial is in this life, so make sure you succeed in this trial. And remember that you have been created for the other world, for the akhirah, for the life that is to come. A profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيه قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم إني أسألك الأمان يوم لا ينفع مال ولا
ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil. And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger." And I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. And I ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. In this program, I would like to talk about Amir al-Mu'mineen, not that much from the historical point of view, but I would like to share with you some of his words about himself in Nahj al-Balagha. Ali, in the words of Ali. When we talk about the Fazail of Ali, one of the Sunni historians makes a comment. He says, if you look at all the books of Hadith among Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, all of them talk about the Fazail of the Khulafa and the prominent Sahaba of Rasul. But he says it's amazing. When you look at the number of Ahadith which have come in the Sunni books about Ali, the number of ahadith from Rasulullah bar Ali are more than the ahadith from Rasul that they have in their books for others. And then he makes a comment. He says, this is in spite of the fact that the enemies always tried to hide his virtues and the friends were afraid to express their feelings about Ali. So enemies were concealing it because they didn't like him. His friends were concealing his virtues and his qualities because they were afraid of being killed. Even then, the number of ahadith which have survived in the books of Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah about Ali supersede the numbers that they have for other Sahaba and Khulafa. And this itself is a miracle and manifestation of the ayat of Quran where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, they try to blow off the light of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala by their mouth, but they do not know that Allah has decided to protect His Noor even if they dislike it. ¶¶
listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Philippines is among the countries facing a soaring plastic waste crisis. However, a group of recyclers are working hard to tackle the problem, turning the waste into building materials. The group is called the Plastic Flamingo, or simply the PLAF. They gather bottles, single-use sachets, and snack food wrappers. The waste is then shredded and molded into post-add planks that can be used for decking and fencing. Their products are also durable enough to make disaster relief shelters and urban furniture. The group says the coronavirus pandemic has worsened the plastic waste problem, sparking a rush for protection equipment. Their disposal is a matter of concern now.
Because of the plastic problem we're currently facing, the pandemic, the huge accumulation of plastic use, there's also improper disposal. People are unaware on, you know, how do I dispose these plastics? Where do I dispose of them? So at the same time, we give that avenue also that instead of putting it in landfills or oceans in general, you know, you give it to the PLAF, you give it to recycling centers like us, and we would recycle these, upcycle them into better products.
The PLAF says surging online shopping is also another problem that they try to address. The group has collected over 100 tons of plastic waste since it started the business in 2019. However, they still have a lot to do. A UN report says some 300 million tons of plastic waste are produced annually, with South Asian countries accounting for 60% of it. A North Macedonian zoo has a new inhabitant. It may be small, but it has certainly sparked a big amount of joy. The baby marmoset was born 3 weeks ago. Its parents are super protective of their precious offspring. That's why zoo staff have not been able to get close to the baby and determine if it's a male or a female. The tiny primate will be given a name after its sex is known. Marmosets are the world's smallest monkeys. On average, they are about 13 centimeters long and weigh up to 100 grams. The adorable animals can be found in a number of countries in the Americas.
The hustle and bustle of modern life has made it difficult to communicate with nature the way humans used to do a few decades ago. Now a giant statue in the state of New York reminds us of the importance of lending an attentive ear to our surroundings. The massive statue, named Water's Soul, is located along the Hudson River. Her woman's head, with her index finger pressing on her lips, seems she's asking bystanders to maintain silence. It's a work of 66-year-old Spanish artist Juanme Palenza. He says the message of his work is, quote, to call on people to listen to the profound noise of the water talking to us. Water's Soul was made of polyester resin, fiberglass, and marble dust at a Barcelona studio. It was later shipped to its Jersey City site for assembly. The sculpture is 24 meters tall.
You might have heard of Iran's stellar wrestling achievements or about its soccer team, but that's not all. Another sport has grabbed attention too. Golfers now competing during Iran's national golf tournament in Tehran. This year, 90 participants from around the country played on a very unique golf course. It is only 13 holes instead of the standard 18, but that hasn't stopped golf enthusiasts playing the 13 holes and then repeating the last five to complete the tournament. The good news is that the golf course might not stay so small for long. Iran's Golf Federation hopes to bring in more people interested in golf, but for this to happen, the infrastructure must be provided first.
We don't have the space to use the 350 instructors to train the 3,000 registered men and women across the country, so we decided to build a national academy off the golf course. Course number 18 will be used in a competition venue during tournaments and as a training and education venue during non-competition times.
When the course was built decades ago in northern Tehran, it had five more holes. But over the years, fairways were laid across parts of the field, reducing playable footprint. Tehran's golf club has about 300 members, half are women. Golf has been around in Iran for over a century, and most of the courses are in southern provinces. Concerned about endangered animals? If yes, then it will be good news that a Mexican zoo has welcomed a newborn zebra. It belongs to the most threatened of the three species of zebra in the world. The foal made a public appearance Thursday, 10 days after it was born at a zoo in northern Mexico. It's about 50 centimeters tall. Its weight, between 10 to 15 kilograms. The newborn equine raises hopes for the conservation of the imperial zebra species.
We are the only zoo in Mexico that has this species of zebra. Unfortunately, it is an endangered species. Here at the zoo, we are doing everything possible to preserve and produce them so that in the future we can repopulate some other parks.
The imperial zebra is native to Africa. It is the largest of the wild equids, the family of horses, donkeys, and other animals. Currently, there are less than 2,500 of imperial zebras in the wild. That's blamed on the destruction of their habitat, illegal hunting, and lack of food.
The world's largest Ferris wheel has opened to public in the United Arab Emirates. Dubbed the Dubai Eye, the wheel takes the visitors to a height of 250 meters, feasts their eyes on the city skyline. That is almost double the height of the iconic London Eye and over 80 meters taller than the high roller in the U.S. city of Las Vegas. Each full rotation of the giant structure takes 38 minutes. The city put on a spectacular firework and light display to celebrate the open.
The 38th edition of the International Short Film Festival has kicked off in the Iranian capital, with some 63 films from 32 countries competing in the event. The festival has for the first time turned into an Oscar qualifying event, giving winning entries a shot at the Academy Awards. This is being held at Tehran's famous Iran Mall cinema complex, and it will showcase short feature, documentary, and experimental works. Five Iranian films and 58 from abroad are selected for the grand prize, and the winner will be presented to the Academy for possible Oscar nomination. The jury has members from Iran as well as Italy, Japan, and France. The festival will be running until October 23rd.
Natural disasters often disrupt normal life, but that's not the case with an Indian couple who got married despite their town being submerged by floodwaters. The couple, identified by local media as health workers in Kerala State, managed to reach a temple for the wedding in a giant cooking pot. They could be seen smiling and waving in their ceremonial clothes while two of their relatives were steering the pot. The couple reportedly borrowed the pot from the temple, saying that was the only option available. The pair was unwilling to postpone their big day, adding an unforgettable story to a country that is famous for many incredible things. Feeling down, it's all right to cry and get help. That's all what a place called the Crying Room tries to tell its visitors in Spain. The Crying Room is part of a building located in central Madrid. It's free and open to the public. The Crying Room aims to remove the stigma attached to mental health, crying, and seeking help. It offers a wide range of services, from a corner to crying, to a phone with a list of psychologists people can call. Motivating messages are also visible on the walls. People have hailed the initiative, saying it helps them speak out about their negative emotions.
I think it's an excellent idea to visualize the widespread of the mental health issue. And I think it's a really fun take on it, to call it the crying room, because of the Spanish expression, if you want to cry, go to the crying room. So it's kind of stigmatized to cry in Spain, as in many other countries. So I wanted to take part in this this visualization of the problem.
The Crying Room was opened in an effort to raise awareness about mental health and well-being. Official data in Spain showed that around 40% of people had symptoms of depression last year. Another 30% experienced anxiety.
The first movie in orbit in the making. Two Russian nationals who traveled to the International Space Station to shoot scenes of that movie are now back on Earth. The Soyuz MS-18 spacecraft carrying an actress and a film director undocked from the ISS early Sunday and successfully touched down in Kazakhstan about 3 hours later. The film crew, along with a veteran astronaut, blasted off from the Russian leased Baikonur Cosmodrome earlier this month. They spent 12 days in the ISS to shoot the scenes. The mission beats a Hollywood movie project starring Tom Cruise. The mission adds to a long list of firsts for Russia's space industry.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Fabric cuts used to recreate Vietnamese landscapes. A woman living in the capital, Hanoi, has been doing that for 40 years now. The artist, 61 years old, explains what material she uses to create her artworks.
All the details in my artworks are cut from cloth which is used for oyai, traditional costume, or cut from silk scarves. These are very small details, and I have to get the whole cloth for oyai. I even have to cut them from beautiful silk scarves sent from my friends abroad.
Tuk says sometimes hundreds of thousands of pieces of cloth are needed to shape the scenes. The cuts should be put together very carefully. Besides that, the woman has to work in a room without any air conditioning, even in the boiling summers of Hanoi. That's because, she says, the pieces of cloth are very tiny and would easily blown away. Her hard work has paid off. The creations sell for up to $5,000. The Vietnamese artist says her work are a summary of the passion and the beauty she has experienced after traveling across her country.
Materials and methods are vital for an artist who combines them to create a masterpiece. Well, a Brazilian artist has used an unusual material to create a huge, dazzling artwork. Mondano has drawn a mural measuring 1,000 square meters using ashes from the burned Amazon rainforest. The artwork on the side of a building in the city of Sao Paulo depicts a firefighter standing near the scenes of deforestation, blazes, and dead animals. Mandano says he traveled extensively to feel that sadness and, more importantly, to collect ashes from for his paintings. He says his aim is to call attention to the environment in his home country, where thousands of wildfires break out each year.
Be the first to catch the balloon. That's what competitors play to win the title at the first Balloon World Cup in Spain. The competition was held in an amusement park in the northeastern city of Tarragona. Participants had to get the balloon to touch the ground before their opponent could touch it. The event was organized by FC Barcelona player Gerard Piqué and a famous web streamer and commentator.
To get out of your comfort zone and try new things. Today we are very proud to have tried something like that and that it has worked so well and that people have enjoyed it. In the end, it's about people having a great time.
The competition was inspired by a trio of American siblings whose balloon game videos had attracted millions of views on TikTok and Instagram. 32 countries competed for the title. An 18-year-old teenager from Peru became the first world champion of this tournament. He defeated his German rival in a 5-minute final match. For those of you with an extreme fear of needles, this may finally be the good news. A group of Dutch researchers say they are working to create painless needle-free injections. The researchers have developed what they call a bubble gun. The device uses a laser to push tiny droplets through the skin. Take a listen to David Fernandez Rivas, the head of the project, explaining how the process is done within a millisecond.
So within a millisecond, the glass that contains the liquid is heated by a laser. A bubble is created in the liquid, pushing the liquid at velocities on the order of 100 kilometers per hour. And we can see the gelatin, how it penetrates about 1 millimeter approximately.
Now, Rivas says the invention will help ease fear of needles and lower the threshold for vaccinations. He believes the new technology can also prevent the risk of contamination through needles and reduce medical waste. If you're eager to get a needle-free shot, you may still have to wait a few more years before they are made available to everyone.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. In this program, Islamic Laws, we're going to talk about the laws about mosque according to Ayatollah Sistani. Let's take a listen to a short biography.
The Grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of 5, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hausa lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzuma Sabzawari and Sharh Ishraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazwini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in fiqh and usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Sheikh Javid, since we are talking about the laws about mosque according to Ayatollah Sistani, let me ask you this question in this episode that is somehow related to the previous episode where I asked you about making some parts of the mosque ritually impure. If something like that happens, if part of the mosque has been made impure, ritually speaking, all right?
Yeah.
Who's supposed to purify it or clean it? The person who made it impure, or whoever comes to know or realize that this part of the mosque is ritually impure?
Of course, according to Ayatollah Sistani and according to all religious authorities, it is necessary, it is obligatory for a person, for the person who has made impure, to purify the mosque. Now, if let's say a child makes the mosque impure, it becomes necessary for the child's father, for the child's guardian, to purify the mosque. And if the child does not have a guardian, or the child's relative is not in a position to purify it, then it becomes a collective obligation of Muslims and people who go to the mosque to purify the mosque as quickly as possible. And whoever does, because a collective obligation means that if one person accepts or undertakes the obligation or fulfills it,
mm-hmm.
or accepts to do it, then other people are relieved of the obligation to purify it. So therefore, if a few people take action to purify the mosque, then other people are no longer under the obligation to purify it. So it is a collective obligation when no one takes action.
Mm-hmm, I see.
And okay. if no one purifies it, then it means that all the people who come to know and who do not take action to purify it, they are sinful.
They are to blame.
They are to blame, yes.
Yes. Okay. Sheikh Javid, if the mosque becomes ritually impure, and, for example, an imagined part of the mosque or the building in the mosque has been made ritually impure, but it cannot be made pure,
sure.
All right?
Yes.
Like by washing, for example, all
yeah.
right? Imagine a brick in the wall, all right?
Yeah.
Is it do we have to take that brick out of the wall and then wash it or make it pure and put it back there? What about those places where, like, in the ground, like on the floor of the building? Do we have to dig that najis part or impure part out?
Ayatollah Sistani says that, you know, since it is necessary to purify the mosque, then any action possible to make it pure is necessary. Even if one has to has to dig a part of the mosque out, like if one has to take out or pull out a brick and wash it and then put it back in its place, or maybe if a person has to dig out the floor and clean it and remove the najasa or the impurity, then one has to do it, okay? And of course, then if the, you know, when you dig the mosque out, you have to put the brick back in its place so that the mosque is made ready for the people to pray there, because the whole and sole goal of the mosque is to pray, okay? It should be a place where people are able to pray, and therefore, if it becomes necessary to dig out the floor, then it has to be done. But then it should be the floor has to be repaired once again quickly, so that the people may be able to offer their prayers there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Javid. Let's take a short break and we'll be back continuing our discussion and laws about mosque according to Ayatollah Sistani.
The office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, and our guest speaker is still Sheikh Javid. We are still talking about the laws about mosque, according to Ayatollah Sistani. And I wanted to ask you, Sheikh Javid, about a challenging type of question. You know, it happens that in some cities or some regions, the road construction, or for the sake of road construction, houses, people's houses are demolished, all right?
Sure.
Can, because of the construction of a road, can a house of God, a mosque, be demolished? Is it permissible to do so? Like, to demolish a house, the house of God, a mosque, in order to build a road, which is kind of necessary for the people to connect, for example, to spots or to places, to dots like A and B, all right?
Yes.
And this road is kind of necessary and indispensable. So can a mosque be demolished this way for the sake of construction of a road?
Well, Ayatollah Sistani and, of course, most of the religious authorities I know stress, and they do say that it's not permissible to demolish a mosque.
Mm-hmm.
This is the basic answer given by the religious authorities, that a mosque, because it is a mosque and it is an endowed property, an endowed property cannot be demolished. It cannot be destroyed, no matter what the reason. Now, if, for example, some places, of course, we see that the government or the municipality actually destroys the mosque without taking it into consideration that it is a mosque and it should remain there. But in the case that the mosque is demolished, of course, then the rules which apply to a mosque do not apply to the place where the mosque used to be there, okay, where the mosque used to stand. Now, for example, when it comes to that place where the mosque used to be, of course, you can make it impure. There's no problem because there's no mosque anymore, because there's a road now passing through that place, and but of course that place is still remains an endowed property, even though a road passes through that place. But the place where the mosque used to be, it cannot be sold. It cannot be appropriated by other people, and it cannot be, let's say, used for any other purposes. For example, but of course, there's no problem in making it impure or in doing something which is considered disrespect to the mosque. But because there's no mosque there now, doing all those acts which were haram for a mosque, which were haram to do in a mosque or to a mosque, is not haram there in that place where now there is a road passing through.
I see. Very quick question again, Sheikh Chawbit. You know, imagine that a government decides to build a mosque somewhere, and now they come to this decision that a road has to be made or constructed there. And the mosque, in fact, is on the way, all right, as an obstacle for them. Can they decide to demolish it now? Or instead of that mosque, they can dedicate another place and endow it as a mosque next to it?
You know, to dedicate another place instead of that place where a mosque is now already built does not become a license for demolishing that mosque. Now, we in modern time, and this time around, I have seen many places, you know, many mosques have been demolished, and of course another mosque elsewhere has been built to allow people, to mu'minin or believers, to pray there, to offer their prayers there.
Yes.
Okay, and such a facility has been provided by the government, but it does not become an excuse for the municipality or for the government to demolish that mosque. Mm-hmm. The mosque cannot be demolished.
I see.
Now, but if it happens, if the government actually does demolish the mosque, then that mosque ceases to become, and the place where the mosque used to be ceases to be a mosque, and therefore any act which used to be haram is now permissible.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the book The Inner Voice, Allama Sayyid Said Akhtar Rizvi aptly explains the need for a man to understand his purpose in life and to be able to ponder over some of the important aspects of our journey in reaching nearness to Allah. Today, we will read to you an excerpt of this book. Stay with us. On Pilgrimage. And for God, the pilgrimage of the house of Allah is obligatory upon the people who have strength to go there. Quran chapter 3, verse 97. Pilgrimage to the house of Allah in Mecca is one of the pillars of Islam. Every Muslim fulfilling certain conditions is obliged to go for Hajj at least once in life. What are the lessons of Hajj? The first thing to attract the eyes is the simple uniformity of tens of thousands of people wearing white unstitched cotton robes. Their purpose is one, and their appearance is one. Here, you will find the unity and brotherhood of Islam demonstrated in its brightest color, angelic white. Then, pondering upon this point, you will realize that to acquire this uniformity, every person had to discard every mark of distinction, every sign of his worldly position, political, social, financial, or otherwise. Maybe a man whom you're talking with is the president of a country, and on the other hand, he may be an obscure laborer in a lonely place. There is nothing to distinguish between them in the house of God. the temporal distinctions have no value in the eyes of God. Here, all human beings have one, only one rank. Here, there are the believed servants of Allah coming to offer their sincere prayers in His house. We are His servants. He is our master. It is the only relationship which counts here. All other distinctions and ranks are artificial. Mecca has no tourist attraction. There are no beautiful sceneries. A place surrounded by barren rocks and hills. According to Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, it would have been as easy for Allah to select a beautiful place for His house. But He selected the barren rocks and stone walls so that people should come here without any worldly motive. They cannot be attracted by pleasures because there is none. They cannot think about business because Mecca has nothing to produce. Therefore, anybody coming to Mecca must come by virtue of necessity with pure intention and untainted purpose. He must come for pilgrimage and pilgrimage only. How can a poor man be arrogant? Wealthy people are the ones who suffer most from this spiritual disease. It is perhaps for this reason that Hajj is obligatory for those only who are rich enough to afford the journey to Mecca. They are more exposed to the killing germs of pride and ego. They have been asked to go to pilgrimage so that they may be cured of these maladies. Thank you so much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was an excerpt from the book Inner Voice by Allama Sayyid Said Akhtar Rizvi. Our website is parstoday.com. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host Musa Al-Bahadli, and you are now listening to the program Up Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems, issues, and other questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. The answers are, as usual, all based upon the noble Quran and the narrations of the Prophet, and naturally of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining me in the studio today is our guest speaker and dear friend Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Dear Sayyid, I welcome you, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Our topic today is a continuation of the previous session's topic about how we should understand our children. Last we spoke about how important it is to cultivate the talents of our children
and support them, and to be very careful not to force them to make this talent into a chore or into a skill. Dear Sayyid, please enlighten us further.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. So we said one of the things that we need to understand when it comes to children, we need to understand that they have hobbies and talents, and we need to work with that.
Right.
A second thing that we need to understand about a child is that the child needs an environment. He needs a safe environment for him to grow in. Now, it's considered to be one of the five pillars of trying to bring a child. So one of the five things that we need to have is the fact that we need to give him time is the fourth thing. We need to give him an environment where the child could grow naturally. Now, same thing with any other plant, right? When you want to grow a plant or a tree, it needs to have that right environment to grow in. Otherwise, it will not grow.
Or if it's too hot or too cold, it will not cope.
Exactly. So it could grow to a certain limit, and then that's it. It doesn't give you any fruits, doesn't get anywhere any
like
further.
Like a fruit tree.
Yeah. So a child needs a very safe environment, and that environment is what we call a house. With houses, parents need to understand that in order for them to have a proper, safe child, they need to create that environment for it. Now,
like a home, you mean?
Yeah,
the home
that the child lives in. So now we have a problem that we have kids who do a lot of bad things. And most of the times, if we look at the core problem or the source of the problem, we find out it is actually the environment that they live in itself.
Or grew up in.
Yeah. So when you have a child, for example, who is... I don't know, he's got too much anger, for example. He's got too much hate. He steals or he lies or he cheats and does things. Most of the times, these problems, they stem from the environment that he's in. So he's not in a very safe environment. Give you an example. Now, most of the houses, a lot of the houses, which is very sad to see, that when you see the parents themselves, the mother and the father, they day and night arguing with one another, fighting with one another, what do you expect a child to grow in? So it's going to obviously affect the child's upbringing.
We are a product of our environment.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Dear Sayyid, we will take a quick break.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are talking about how important it is for a child to be raised in a safe environment. Dear Sayyid, please pick up where we left off.
So we were saying that when the parents themselves, they argue with one another, curse one another, because now this is just
It's a fact of life.
Yeah, fact of life, or just something natural. That parents curse each other, they throw names at each other, and God forbid, at times it might even lead to domestic violence. So that will definitely lead the child to have all his morals and all his ethics and all his programming deformed in a way or another.
Naturally.
So he would, when he misses out on having a safe, prosperous house and living with parents who are